like to welcome you to the Emmaus Road. And this is the first presentation that is using Volume 5 of the Arcana Celestia as its basis. And today we're going to be taking the central theme from the first part of that volume, which has to do with the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place. Now this can be found in the Gospel of Matthew in chapter 24, verses 8-18, and specifically in verses 15. And also in the Arcana Celestia, it's expounded between the numbers 3,650 through to 3,655. So the question is, when you see the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place, what are we to do? And what does this actually mean? So let me begin just by reading from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 24, verses 8-18. All these things are the beginning of sorrows. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations. And then the end will come. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. And so a bit of an explanation of this occurs, or a partial explanation of these verses occurs in the Arcana Celestia number 3652. And it says this: the internal sense of these words is as follows. When therefore you see the abomination of desolation, means when the church has undergone vastation, which is the situation when the Lord is acknowledged no longer, and therefore when there is no love of him, nor any belief in him. Also when there is no longer any charity towards the neighbour, nor consequently any belief in what is good and true. When these conditions exist in the church, or rather in the area where the word is, that is to say, in the thoughts of the heart, though not in the doctrine of the lips, it is a case of desolation, and the circumstances that have been mentioned constitute the abomination of desolation. Consequently, when you see the abomination of desolation, means when anyone witnesses such conditions, and what he is to do when he does witness them, follows in verses 16 to 18. From a logopraxis perspective, everything in the text provides us with a description or descriptions of the spiritual or mental processes that are involved in the word's regeneration of the human mind. Sacred texts, therefore, unfold the inner life of the logos or the word as it works to regenerate us. And so these things are read in the context of the development of the human spirit. In logopraxis work, we read the text with purpose. We read it with a view to having the text actually read us. And we do that in the hope that in being read by the text, we might be able to read the circumstances of our external life so as to see them from a spiritual rather than a natural perspective. And in those moments when this occurs, when we are able to read our life from the Word, then our life, our whole life, becomes something much more integrated, which makes complete sense, for when life is viewed from the Word, and the Word is acknowledged to be the Lord himself, then conjunction, integration, and wholeness must be the result. So I was struck in our reading this time round with the statement found in number 3652, subsection 3. And it makes this comment, "Let him who is reading this take note," means that these matters are to be thoroughly understood by those within the church, especially by those who have love and faith to whom the present words refer. So the point being made is that what is offered through the text in this reading is actually something that needs to be thoroughly understood by those in the church. And I would suggest that this is because the process being described as when you see the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place, and then the instructions as to what is to be done in response, describes a process that is unavoidable for those who are engaging with the Word as a basis for inner work. So one of the things we find when we are working with the Word is that the very things that we read of in the text are brought into being through the very act of reading, particularly when our focus is on the application of the text to life. What we find is that our life starts to become framed within the context of the text, and we begin to read our life in the light of the text. And this is very much in keeping with the Gospel of John and the opening chapter, where we read about the creative power of the Word, or the Logos, and it is described as bringing all things that have come into being into being. And so this is true for us as we engage with the Word. It is not just a reference to the things we see around us, but it's a reference in terms of the physical world, but it's a reference to how the Word is dynamic in the human mind, and how it creates our perceptions, our new perceptions, as we begin to apply that Word to our life. So when we have read about the abomination of desolation, suddenly we find ourselves being brought face to face with it as an inner reality active in our life, if we so choose to work with the Word in an effort to see what is being described there in our actual life. So seeing the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place is a state of seeing the proprium active in our life where we had not seen it before. And this seeing is from the Lord, for it is something that comes into view from our having read about it in the Word. If we had not read about it, we would not have the ability to see it. So the Word offers us the ability to see. So while it may be unsettling to see the abomination of desolation within us, it needs to be remembered that the whole process is being managed by the Lord, and it's being managed by him as the Word, and what he assures us of is that this is done in order to secure our long-term or eternal spiritual welfare. The Lord is interested in nothing else. So what the Word describes in the text is a process by which a change of state can be effected within the church, or within a church, that church being the individual. So on the level of the individual, it has to do with how we are moved from an old church into a new church, or from an old way of understanding the Word into a new way of understanding the Word and the life that is able to come from that. It is our understanding of the Word and the life that comes from it that constitutes the holy place. This is regarded as a holy place while it is able to serve the Lord's ends, or the regeneration of the human mind. We know that our understanding of the Word is and will always be something limited, because we are, in fact, finite beings. The result of this is that our understanding of the word is constantly undergoing change and renewal as we move from a more obscure view of things into a less obscure view of things. And that is a continual process. So in the Arcana we read that before the Lord the heavens are not pure, and that even the angels are being perfected to eternity. It follows that the state of everyone's understanding of the word is imperfect, being filled with appearances and even falsities, where appearances are not seen to be appearances but are in fact believed to be truths. What's remarkable is that the Lord is able to make these appearances and falsities to be as if they were truths for us, so that good or innocence might be adjoined to them, thus enabling the regeneration of the human mind to occur. So I'm just going to read through a few numbers here that cover off the things we've just been talking about. In the Arcana Celestia number 633, we read this: "The situation is this. No understanding of truth or will for good resides with anyone, not even with those who belong to the most ancient church. When people become celestial, however, they do seem to have a will for good and an understanding of truth residing with them. But in reality, it is the Lord alone, a fact they also know, acknowledge, and perceive, as is the case also with angels. This is so true that a person who does not know, acknowledge, and perceive it has no understanding of truth and will for good whatever. With every man and with every angel, even the most celestial, his proprium is nothing but falsity and evil, for it is well known that in the Lord's eyes the heavens are not pure, and that all good and truth are the Lord's alone. But to the extent that any man or angel is capable of being perfected, he is in the Lord's divine mercy perfected, and receives, so to speak, an understanding of truth and a will for good. His own possession of them, however, is only an appearance. Everybody is capable of being perfected and consequently of receiving this gift of the Lord's mercy insofar as the deeds he actually performs in life will allow, and in a manner consistent with the hereditary evil implanted within him from parents." Another number is the Arcana Celestia number 7975, and it says this: "And also a large mixed crowd means truths and forms of good that were not genuine. This is clear from the meaning of a mixed crowd as non-genuine forms of good. For when the children of Israel represents the genuine forms of good and truths that the spiritual church possesses, a mixed crowd going along with them means truths and forms of good that are not genuine. For the situation so far as those belonging to the spiritual church are concerned is this. They possess forms of good and truths that are genuine, and they possess those that are not genuine. For a member of the spiritual church has no intuitive perception of what is good and true. Instead, he acknowledges and believes that to be good and true which is taught by the teachings of his church. This being so, he is in possession of a great number of truths that are not genuine, and also as a consequence desires forms of good of a similar nature, since forms of good derive their specific quality from truths. Even so, the Lord maintains them in forms of good which are as genuine as possible. He accomplishes this by flowing in through their interiors, at which point non-genuine truths and forms of good are separated from the genuine and cast to the sides. The latter are what an extremely large mixed crowd means." And another reading from the Arcana Celestia again, from number 2249, subsection 3. "The position with heavenly Arcana is that although they lie beyond all apprehension, everyone nevertheless formulates for himself some idea of them. For nothing can ever be retained in the memory, still less enter any thought whatever, except through some idea, however this came to be formed. And since angels' ideas could not be formed except from those objects that exist in the world, or from objects analogous to those in the world, and since at that time illusions arising from things that were not understood entered in, illusions which in the next life alienate the then more interior ideas of thought from the truth and good of faith. Therefore, much is said in this chapter in the internal sense to dispel such illusions regarding the conjunction of the Lord's human with the divine and regarding his perception and thought. And when men read the word, those matters enter at the same time into the perception of angels in such a way that previous ideas that had been formed from alien sources and from scruples easily arising out of these are gradually dispersed, and new ideas are instilled which are in keeping with the light of truth that angels possess. This happens more among spiritual angels than celestial, for it is in the measure that ideas are purified that spiritual angels are made more perfect for receiving celestial things. It is well known that even heaven is not pure in the sight of the Lord, for it is indeed true that angels are constantly being made more perfect. And from the Arcana number 3207, subsection 3 and 4. But it should be recognized that no truths with man nor even with an angel are ever pure, that is, free of appearances. Every single one is an appearance of the truth, but appearances are nevertheless accepted by the Lord as truths if they hold good within them. To the Lord alone do pure truths, being divine truths, belong. For as the Lord is good itself, so is he truth itself. See, however, what has been stated already about truths and the appearances of truths. The coverings and the veils of the tent of meeting meant appearances of truth. Number 2576. Truths with man are appearances steeped in illusions. Number 2053. Rational concepts are appearances of truth. Number 2516. Truths exist within appearances. Number 2196, 2203, 2209. 2242. Divine good flows into appearances and even into illusions. Number 2554. Appearances of truth are adapted by the Lord as though they were truths. Number 1832. In the word, things are expressed in accord with appearances. Number 1838. What appearances are, however, becomes quite clear from those places in the word where things are expressed according to appearances. But there are different degrees of appearances of truth. Natural appearances of truth are for the most part illusions, but when they reside with people who are governed by good, they ought not, in their case, to be called illusions, but appearances. And even in some respect, truths, for good is held within them, which holds the divine within itself and causes them to be different in essence. Rational appearances of truth, however, are more and more interior. These occur in heaven, that is to say, they exist with angels who are in heaven. See number 2576. To have some idea of what the appearances of truth are, let the following serve by way of illustration. 1. Man supposes that he is reformed and regenerated by means of the truth of faith, but this is an appearance. He is reformed and regenerated by means of the good of faith, that is, by means of charity towards the neighbor and love to the Lord. 2. Man supposes that because truth teaches, truth enables him to perceive what is good, but this is an appearance. It is good that enables truth to perceive, for good is the soul or life of truth. Number 3. Man supposes that truth leads to good when he lives according to the truth he has learned. But it is good which flows into truth and leads truth toward itself. Number four, to man it seems as though truth perfects good, when in fact good perfects truth. Number five, to man it seems as though the good actions of life are the fruits of faith, but they are the fruits of charity. From these few illustrations, one can know in some measure what appearances of truth are. Such appearances are countless. So Logopraxis, we recognize that the regeneration of the human mind is directly related to the development of a person's understanding of the word. The process of development can be thought of as cyclic, in the sense that our understanding of the word and its truths cycle through a similar pattern as each phase of regeneration unfolds. The state of understanding that supports any given stage of spiritual development is finite and passes through a kind of life cycle, and in the end is destined to pass away. This means that while a given understanding is able to serve as a support for a given stage of regeneration, and in that state can be said to be holy, there comes a time when that state of understanding can no longer support the advancing regeneration of the human mind. And so at that point, that state of understanding must be vastated if a new state of understanding is to arise that can indeed continue to support the regeneration of the human mind further. So every state of understanding over the course of a person's regeneration will have something of the self or of the proprium within it. This is unavoidable. Even the heavens before the Lord, as we read earlier, is impure. While the state of the understanding of the word in a person is able to serve the Lord's ends, it is clothed with innocence. The innocence that comes from ignorance. And so, when it comes to the proprium's influence, this is barely visible. But when that state of specific understanding for a specific stage of development has advanced the processes of regeneration as far as it can, then a significant change is then required. This significant change of state is facilitated through the exposing of the proprium's presence in what was thought to be a holy state. And this exposing of the proprium is referred to in the reading as the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place. So then, of course, the question becomes, what to do? What are we to do when we see the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place of our life? The thing to be aware of is that we cannot avoid the visitation of the old if we are to enter into the new. Thankfully, the Lord, as the Word, provides us with instructions as to how to respond when we see the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place. We are told that those in Judea are to flee to the mountains. He who is on the rooftop is not to go down to collect anything from the house, and that he who is in the field is not to turn back to get his clothing. So in general terms, the instruction from the word is that we are to remain in states of good or charity. We are to avoid retreating into more exterior states belonging to intellectual things or doctrine. We might ask ourselves what this looks like in terms of the practical side of inner work. The key provided in the text is a reference to Lot's wife. In the Arcana Celestia, number 3653, we are asked to see what is said in the same work, in number 2454, regarding the meaning of turning back and looking back behind oneself. In 2454, subsection 5, it says that turning back or looking back behind oneself involves truths being turned away from good toward doctrine. Now, this appears to suggest that doctrine is a bad thing, and that good is, well, a good thing. But this is not what should be taken from this statement. All truths have a use, and that use is to give form to good, so that what is good might be seen and practiced. But good is only seen when truths are being applied to the life of the mind. This kind of application involves using truths as the basis for self-examination and repentance, which, to be a spiritual practice, involves having truths directed toward the affections and thoughts arising in our awareness. By good, or charity, in logopraxis work is understood the practice of shunning evils as sins against the word. You can see the Apocalypse Explained, number 808, subsection 2, and the little work called Charity, number 1, which expounds on this. Charity in this sense means the application of truths to the life of the mind. So in order to be regenerated, truths drawn from the word have to be being applied in an effort to discern the quality of what is arising and what we are taking to be our thoughts and affections. And we are to do this with a view to practicing repentance where and when this is required. So if this is not happening, that is, if self-examination and repentance as related to the life of the mind is not happening, then we do well to consider what we actually mean by the phrase living a spiritual life. When truths are orientated toward good or charity, they are being used to support a life focused on shunning evils as sins against the word, through an actual practice of self-examination and repentance. The admonition the word offers us when the abomination of desolation is seen to be standing in the holy place is to seek to be in a state of good or charity. This is what is meant by fleeing to the mountains, remaining on the house rooftop, being in the field. We do this by looking to the Lord, or to good, which in logopraxis terms is to continue to practice the word by applying its truths to remain in a state of self-examination whenever we are given to see the proprium at work in our life. This is how our attachment to what has become detrimental to our spiritual welfare can be seen in order for it to be loosed, and thereby opening the way for new insights, or for a new church, or for a new understanding of the word to be received. There is nothing pleasant in being confronted with how our own self-interest has been active in what we believe to be spiritual, or a spiritual aspect of our life. Anytime we see the proprium's activity for what it is, there is a tendency to dismiss it or to justify it in some way. And this is because in such moments, mental tension is created between the picture of self that we are attached to or have invested in and call our own, and the picture of the same self that is provided through insights arising out of our work with truths from the Word. Truths, when applied to life, invariably show us just how opposed to the life of heaven this self is in terms of its attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors. This passage from Matthew's Gospel points out that the way forward in those moments when we are actually aware of the contradictions within ourselves is to remain in the image of the proprium the Word provides, and not to minimize this through allowing that false self-image born of the proprium to dominate our sense of who we are. The word is well able to carry us through states of contradiction and discomfort, so that we might come to see fully what it is we are being given to see. But it can only do that if we are willing to work with it. The word lifts us out of the false proprial self by giving us truths to see it. And to the degree that we can be in these, so to that degree we experience a new sense of self. So in Loga Praxis we have a saying, the freeing is in the seeing. The Lord in the Gospel says, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Any attempt to move away from a state of observing what's arising in our awareness due to the light that truths provide for us is to turn truths away from their application to the life of the mind and towards doctrine. Now, this is not saying, as I mentioned before, that doctrine isn't important. It is. It is essential to the spiritual life. However, this kind of doctrine spoken of here is not the kind that is directed towards supporting a spiritual practice or good, but is an intellectualization of spiritual things whereby truths are separated from the spiritual life or the work of self-examination and repentance and submerged in things that have nothing to do with that kind of work. Doctrine that supports people to will truths into life through their practice directs truths towards good. But doctrine that doesn't do this sinks truths into intellectual speculations that are devoid of life applications. Such a state is described as Lot's wife being turned into a pillar of salt. So that brings us to the end of this session of the Emmaus Road, and it's my hope that what has been provided for you in this presentation is able to support the furtherance of your work in the Word. Thanks for listening.